Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen.
Daf Tzaddi Bet. Today's daf is being studied in honor of Chilfon ben Regina Malka and Mazal Bat Esther, dedicated anonymously. Today's daf is being studied Le'ailu Nishmat Hacham Baruch Rafael ben Miriam and Avraham ben Esther. Ruach Hashem Tanichim Began Eden. Amen. In yesterday's daf, we learned a very important machloket between Hizkiyah and Rabbi Yohanan. The machloket was regarding the concept Eged Keli, Sheme Eged, or Lo Sheme Eged. Let's review that concept again. We talked about a kupa, a box, let's say filled with fruit, that was placed on an askupa in the Rishut Rabbim. We explained that, let's say you have in it mustard seed, okay? Mustard seed obviously is small. Even though part of the askupa is in the Reshut Yahid and part of it's in the on the askupa, which is Reshut Rabim, Hizkiyah says, if one places it there, one is going to be Hayav, since bottom line, the mustard seed is all in the Reshut Rabim. Even though the keli itself is partly in the Reshut Yahid, he holds Eged Keli La Sheme Eged, that the Keli, we don't judge what's in it to follow the Keli, and therefore one is going to be Hayav. Whereas Rabbi Yohanan argued and said no, that even though the mustard seed are totally in the Reshut Rabim, since the Keli that it's in, the Kupa, is partly in the Reshut Hayahid, Eged Keli Sheme Eged, that means whatever's in the kupa, we go after the kupa itself, and since it's partly in, it considers everything to be in, and therefore you're going to be patur. That was the mahlok between Hizkiyah and Rabbi Yohanan. Now the Gemara is going to ask a question according to Rabbi Yohanan, and we start five lines from the bottom. Mativ Rabbi Bai Barabaye, Rabbi Bai Barabaye, brought a question from a braita. Hagonev kis b'Shabbat. We're talking about a fellow that stole a purse of money on Shabbat. Hayav. He's going to be hayav two things. First of all, he's going to be hayav to make remunerations. He's going to have to pay back the money that he stole. And he's also going to be hayav for Shabbat. Meaning, we're talking about a case where he stole the wallet by taking it from a public domain into a private domain. So therefore, once he picks up the wallet, so already that he made a kinyan on it. So immediately he's chayav on gineva, he has to pay. Once he transfers it into another domain, now he's chayav for Shabbat. Now, only because of the fact that the isurim happened at separate times, is he chayav for both. Because normally we have a principle, usually we give the person the more severe punishment. Here, the punishment for Shabbat, if let's say he was warned, is mitah. And therefore the rule is you don't make a person pay and die. You give him the more severe punishment, which means you kill him for the Shabbat and he's off the hook for the payment. That's only when what? When both of them come simultaneously. But here, the Isur of Geneva came first. The second he picks up the wallet, he makes a kinyan on it. And he didn't move it from the Rishuyot yet, so therefore he's Hayav on Geneva. Once he transfers it out to the other Rishut, now he's Hayav on Shabbat. So since it happened at different times, he's Hayav on both. That's the first case. I read again. Agonev kis b'Shabbat Hayav. He's chayav what? He's chayav to pay. Shekevar nitchayev begeneva, because he was chayav already on geneva, on the stealing. Kodem shiyavo lidei isur Shabbat, before he comes to the isur of Shabbat. However, hayav megarer v'yotze. Let's say he was dragging it out, which means, how does a person normally make kinyan? He makes kinyan hagbaha. He lifts it off the ground. That's considered a kinyan. However, here, what he was doing was, he was dragging the wallet out. Now, in that case, when you're dragging it out, that's called meshicha. Now, the only way you could be koneh,
with the kinyan of Meshicha, it has to be outside the domain that you're stealing it from. So long as it's in the domain of the person you're stealing it from and you're pulling it, it's not yours yet. You have to pull it out. So in this case, it's happening simultaneously, which seemingly, meaning when he pulls it out, the Geneva and the Chilul Shabbat is happening at the same time. So therefore the Ibraita says, Hayam Begarer V'Yotzeh, if he was dragging it out, let's read the Rashi, five lines from the bottom, Hayam Begarer V'Yotzeh, Rashi says, Shelo Kena B'Hagbaha, Ela B'Hotzah Mibet HaBe'alim. Exactly, which means he didn't kone by lifting it up, he's just removing it from the owner's domain. Let's read the other Rashi. Patur mitashlumin, he'll be exempt from paying. Rashi continues, Share, the Gemara says, Isur Geneva, the Isur Shabbat, Baim Kehad. Right, because then the Isur of Shabbat and Geneva comes simultaneously, and we have the rule of Kim Le Bederabamine. We give him the stronger punishment. Therefore, he'd be patur from paying. That's the two cases of the Braita. Now the Gemara asks the question. The Isal Kadatach Eged Keli Sheme Eged. If you hold the rule like Rabbi Yochanan, that the thing that's in the Keli joins the Keli joins the things that are in it, and therefore it follows the Keli. Kadim Le Isur Geneba Le Isur Shabbat. The Isur of Geneva came first. Why? Because, look at Rashi, three lines from the bottom. The Geneva comes before Shabbat. Why? Rashi. The Kevan Chotzi Om Miksato. Once already he's pulling the wallet out. The moment part of the monies are on the other side around, he's considered a Ganav already on that. But for Shabbat, we say no. Eged Keli Sheme Eged. Therefore, he didn't take out the whole keli and it's still in the reshut hayachid. Therefore, Shabbat did not hit yet. Therefore, since it's happening not at the same time, he should be hayav on both. He should be hayav on the geneva that happened first, and then he should be hayav on the Shabbat that happened subsequently. So this is a question on Rabbi Yochanan. Again, you Rabbi Yochanan said, Eged keli sheme eged. If that's the case, you should be hayav in this case. Why? Because he pulls out the wallet. The second sum of the monies, the nyan geneva, once some of the monies come into the next domain, hayav, finish, hayav geneva. But however, for Shabbat, you're not hayav yet, because since part of the keli is still in the reshut, hayachid. And if you hold eged keli, sheme eged, it's considered did not leave yet. So the Shabbat comes after. So why does the Braita say, Patur, according to the Yochanan, it should indeed be hayav? That's the Gemara's question. Let's just read the bottom Rashi, the three lines on the bottom Rashi. Kadim le isur geneva le isur Shabbat, tekevan shiotzi o miksato. Right? Once when he pulls out part of the wallet, kana kol ma'ot shebachutz. All the money that's already on the outside towards the Shut Rabim is considered his now, meaning it's considered stolen. Why? Shiachot beotzio derech piv. Because bottom line, since let's say the opening of the wallet is on the Shut Rabim side, so that she says he could just stick his hands now in the wallet and pull it out. So therefore, l'inyan geneva, once it crosses the border, so to speak, so he can stick his hand in the wallet, so that's considered what? Hayav geneva. That she continues, l'inyan Shabbat, miftar, de'agidi gabe reshut yachid ade akeli. But l'inyan Shabbat, we say, eged keli, the keli is still on the other side, so Shabbat doesn't come till after. So therefore, really, he should be hayav. So why does the Braita say, I'm sorry, he should be hayav. So why does the Braita say, patur? So Rabbi Yochanan will answer. Gemara says like this. I'm reading three lines on the bottom. V'isal kadadach eged keli sheme eged. If indeed, Joel, doesn't matter. Since you can take it out, it's accessible, you hayav geneva at that point. The wallet has an opening, right? So once it hits the reshut rabim, that little area, just pull out the money, and the money is considered yours at that point. But in Yom Shabbat, if you hold Eged Keli Sheme Eged, part of the Keli is still in the Shut Yachid, it follows the... You have to pull it out from one Nishut to another Nishut to be Hayam on Shabbat. When you're going from one Nishut to another Nishut, you don't need four Amot. Once you just pull it from one Nishut to another Nishut,
So here the whole keli did not go into the second neshun yet. So Shabbat you're not hayav. The geneva you hayav the moment the opening of the wallet comes into the neshut rabim. You own it now because you could pull out that money on that side. So it's a question on Rabbi Yochanan. So the Gemara says, "E de afke derech piv hakenameh." You're right. If you're pulling it out by the opening, where the opening is hitting the opening of the wallet is hitting the neshut rabim first, you have a good question. You know what I'll tell you the case is talking about? The afke derech shulav. You're pulling it out from the other side. Which means the face of the wallet, let's say, is facing the neshut yachid, so you're pulling it backwards. And therefore, when you pull it out, you're not chayav geneva the second the back hits the neshut rabim, because it's not accessible to you yet. You cannot pull the money out from the backside of it, and therefore, as long as you keep on pulling it, when are you hayav geneva? When the whole thing comes out, and at the same time you'll be hayav on Shabbat. So since it's happening simultaneously, exactly, you're patur from paying because kim leh bedreva mineh. So the Gemara says, wait, ve'aika makom helma, which means even though, let's say you're right, you took it out, let's say backwards, right? Still you have makom chana, which literally means the place of the stitching. It seems the wallet has an area of stitching on the side where all you have to do is just widen the stitching a little and you'll be able to pull out the money. Now obviously we're talking about, let's say, where you're able to widen the stitching, or the stitching, let's say, is wide enough where you don't have to make an isur on Shabbat. So therefore, let's say the stitching, even though you're right, the opening of the wallet is not facing the Rishut Rabim, but this stitching of the wallet, which will also make the money accessible to you, and therefore, technically, you hayav on Geneva first, right? Once the stitching area came out, were you able to access it? Let's read that inside for a second on the bottom, Nashi. Ha'ika makom helma, bottom line in Nashi. Makom atifira. Right? The place of the stitching, shiachol likrawa unhosi. Right? Were you able to make a little tear and pull it out? So the Gemara says, and we go to the Amud Rishon, the iba'im mifka'le, because if he would want to rip that area of the stitching, v'shakil, he would be able to take it. So therefore, to explain the braita, we can always amend it and make it work. And therefore, I'll tell you, you're going to be patur. Why? Because the geneva came first, and then the Shabbat came. So the Gemara says, Beniska, I can tell you, we're talking about niska. Literally means it's not regular monies. I can tell you that we're talking about, for example, you have silver bars, for example. Now, if you have silver bars in the wallet, so now, let's analyze. Silver bars, right, exactly, like the cucumber case, which means they're very long. And therefore, even though, let's say, part of it is in the reshut harabim, but it's not considered stealing yet. Because bottom line, the other part of it is in the reshut hayachid. Because you didn't remove the whole thing. So therefore, you're not going to be hayav technically on geneva at that point. Let's read that sheet for a second. Beniska, she'em hatichot aruchot. Right? They're long bars. V'chozeman she'miksatam b'bifneem. Right? So long as a portion of them are inside, lo kana. So you were not kone. So therefore, what are we saying? The geneva and the Shabbat is happening simultaneously. That's why it says patur. Because kimne b'drava mine. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan so far is able to hold his own in the braita. Right? So comes the Gemara and says, v'chem and the ika shenatzin. Gemara says, there's shenatzin. Shenatzin literally means there's straps that are attached to the wallet. Mapik le'ad pumeh v'shareh v'shakil v'shenatzin agideh megavai. Which means, the Gemara is saying like this, and I'll explain it, and then I'll read the words. Let's read Rashi. The wallet itself has straps.
Okay? Now, let's analyze. Imagine the wallet would have like a drawstring coming out of it, okay? Now, let's analyze what's going to happen here. You pull the wallet out. Let's say there's bars of silver in the wallet. Technically, if you're pulling it out, you could pull all the bars out into the Rishut HaRabim, so they'd be Hayab on that moment, Geneva. However, the drawstrings, the straps of the wallet are still in the Rishut HaYahid. So if you hold Eged Keli, Sheme Eged, so it's going to follow the drawstrings in Yan Shabbat. And therefore, you're going not to be Hayab Yan on Shabbat, therefore you should be Hayab both, which is once you pull it totally out, since it happened at separate times, so therefore the Gemara is still asking a question on Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, you answered me, we're talking about bars of silver. So therefore you want the time it happened simultaneously. No, it doesn't happen simultaneously, because you forgot about the drawstrings. Which is, even though you pull the whole wallet out, and you'd be Hayab Geneva at that point, because the whole, let's say the bars came out, what about the strings? There are strings that are still in the Rishut HaYachid. Until those strings come out, that's considered like the rule of Eged Keli. Therefore, it goes after the part of the Keli. Part of the Keli is from the Rishut HaYachid. You're not Hayav yet on Hotzah. Therefore, you should be Hayav too. You should be Hayav on Geneva. And you should be Hayav on Shabbat. So why did the Mishnah say you're patur in such a case? Ha'ikas shenat zin. Let me read that inside for you. The first line of the Gemara I'm reading again. The Chema di'ikas shenat zin. Since it has straps, mapikle ad pume, right? You'll take out the wallet from till its mouth, which means now once the mouth of the wallet is in the shoot, it's accessible to remove the bars. So you'd be hayav on geneva v'share, right? You'll untie it v'shakil, right? And you'll take out the money, which is hayav geneva at that time because it's accessible v'shenatzim agidi megavai. But the shenatzim, the straps are still inside. And therefore, you're not hayav yet on Shabbat. So the Gemara, no, the straps are part of the wallet. Something whether you want them or not. Since they're part of the wallet, it's like a candy. Since the whole candy is not yet on the other side. So the Gemara answers, okay, delika shenatzim. Okay, so I'll make a case, like you said, Ralph. The case is still about where there's no straps. So therefore, bottom line, if there's no straps, the only way you're going to be hayab is until you pull the whole thing out, because we're talking about bars, right? So therefore, the hayuv of Geneva and the hayuv of Shabbat happens simultaneously, and therefore you'll be patur. V'ibayitem, I can give a different answer. The itle. Really, I can tell you there is straps. But the straps were not dangling out. The straps are wrapped around the wallet. And therefore, they're not going to lag behind. The moment you pull the wallet out into the Rishut HaRabim, the straps are coming with it simultaneously. So therefore, we successfully answered the Braita even according to Rabbi Yochanan, which means Rabbi Yochanan held Eged Keli Sheme Eged. So which means what? That for Shabbat, it follows the Keli. Right, so long as part of the keli is an issue with the yachid, it's not considered yet that the other part of the keli is out. Oh, so our question was from a braita that said, if a guy steals a wallet on Shabbat, by dragging it out of the private domain to a public domain, so he's going to be patur. Why? Patur from paying. Because the Shabbat and Geneva happen simultaneously. So the Gemara challenged Rabbi Yochanan. Because right, we assumed the case was talking where part of the Keli is still in the Rishut HaYachid, and therefore it's not happening simultaneously. So the Gemara answered, no, we can still say that we're talking about bars. We're talking about where the opening of the wallet is facing the Rishut HaYachid. We're talking about where the straps are wrapped around it. So therefore, bottom line, with all the conditions that we made to the Braita, the Isur of Geneva and the Isur of Shabbat are indeed happening simultaneously. And therefore, the Braita says, Patur. Why? Because Kimneh, Pederabah, meaning we only give the person the stricter punishment when the Isur of Geneva and the Isur of Shabbat happens simultaneously. The stricter punishment in this case would be Hayuv Mita. Vechen Amar Rava. Rava said the same thing. That what? Lo shanu ela bekupa mele'a kishu'in v'diluin. Rava said what? That the only time that we said in the Mishnah that you're going to be patur when you have these vegetables in a kupa, that's on an eskupa, it's only talking about where they're long vegetables, like cucumbers or squash.
Aval mele'achar dal, but if it's filled with mustard seed, chayav. What's the logic of that? Alma kasabar must be Rava holds eged keli lo sheme eged. That what? That we don't go after the keli, we go after what's in the keli. Since the mustard seed is all in the reshut harabim, I don't care if part of the keli is in the reshut hayachid, which means Rava is going like Hezkiah. Abaye amar, and Abaye will take the other side. Ama afilu melachar dal, even if the kupa is filled with mustard seed patur. What's his logic? Alma kasabar eged keli sheme eged. He must hold that what? That you go after the keli. Abaye must hold like Rabbi Yohanan. So the machloket tanaim of Hezkiah and Rabbi Yohanan is actually the same machloket between the Amoraim, Rava, and Abaye. Comes again when it says, Kam Abaye b'shitate de Rava, Kam Rava b'shitate de Abaye. They switched. Their opinion switched, which is Abaye adopted the opinion of Rava, and Rava adopted the opinion of Abaye, which means we just said that Rava holds Eged Keli Lashem Eged. Now we're saying no, Abaye switched. He really holds like Rabbi Hanan that Eged Keli Shem Eged. That's Rava, and it's Abaye that holds Eged Keli Lashem Eged. Now, once they switch their opinions, now the Gemara says, based on the switch of opinion, we have a question on them from a Braita. Now we brought a contradiction on Abaye from an opinion of Abaye in a Braita, and Rava to an opinion of Rava. And not in a Braita, but in a statement. I'm sorry, because Rava is Amoraim. It cannot be a Braita. It's an Amoraic statement. The Itmar, because we have an Amoraic statement, Hamotzi Perot Lishut Rabim. Right, let's get the case. A guy goes out and he brings fruit into the public domain, on Shabbat of course. Abaye Amar, Biyad Hayav. If he brings it out by hand, right, he moves the perot by hand, so he's going to be Hayav. Right, the second his hand reaches the Reshut HaRabim, he's Hayav, even though let's say his body is still in the private domain, but he sticks his hand over the public domain, at that point he's going to be Hayav, the Hidush being, even though his body is in one domain, just his hand is in the other, you go after the hand, okay? Biyad, hayat. Bikhli, patur. However, if you do it in a keli, patur. Why? That she says, because so long as part of the keli is still in the house, it's going to be patur. Now, what does that teach me? That so long as part, even though the fruit, let's say, is all in the Reshut HaRabim, but since part of the keli is still the Reshut HaYachid, Eged Keli, Sheme Keli. This is the opinion of Abaye, but Abaye, you just told me, Eged Keli, La Sheme Keli. So it's a contradiction on Abaye. Now let's get the contradiction to Rabah. The Rabah Amar, Biyad Patur. Rabah argues, no, Biyad Patur. Because Baba, since you're still in the house, I don't care, it doesn't go after your hand. It goes after where you're standing. So Biyad Patur. Bichli Hayav. But Bichli, you're going to be Hayav. Even though part of the keli is still in the shoot, the yachid must be, this rabbi holds, Rava holds, eged keli, la sheme eged. Therefore you're going to be chayav. But that argues on what we just said in Rava. So the Gemara says, ipuch. Okay, switch the opinions in this Amoraic statement so it'll work out. She means switch in this statement over here. Abaye for Rava, and therefore both opinions now are able to stay good. Very good, very good. The Mefarshim do point this out. Maybe this statement was said before. He said, from the fact that Gemara is asking, you have to say that they knew for a fact that this Amoraic statement was said after they switched their opinions earlier. Very good question. We must say that. Otherwise, you can answer that answer. Just say that this Amoraic statement was going before they made their switch. Right? Because originally they held the first way, then they changed it. Now, comes the Gemara and asks one more question on this point. Biyad Hayav. Right? One of the opinions in that statement said what? That a person standing in the Reshut HaYachid. Right? And he stuck the item out into the Reshut HaRabim, he's going to be Hayav. So the Gemara says, V'hatenan, didn't we learn on Daf Bet, the first Mishnah and Masechet Shabbat, Pashat Ba'al HaBayit Yado Lachutz. If the Ba'al HaBayit, that's inside. He stuck his head outside with an object in that hand. V'natal L'Ani Metucha, and the Ani took from the Ba'al HaBayit's hand. So we explained that the Ba'al HaBayit made the Akira, and the Ani made the Hanara. However, according to what we're saying now, If you're telling me that once a guy sticks his hand into the Rishut HaRabim, he's considered Chayav, so therefore, why would you say Patur? On the contrary, the Baal HaBayit did the Akirah, and then he put his hand in the Rishut HaRabim, he did the Hanaha by sticking his hand out. How could the first Mishnah say Patur? If we have it now, you're saying, but how could you tell me? I said the opposite way. How could you tell me that in the case where you stuck your hand out, you're Hayav, if the first Mishnah taught us that indeed that case is Patur? Now, or Shinatan Netucha, or the other case in the Mishnah was where the Baal HaBayit stuck his hand out empty, and the Ani put it in his hand. That means the Ani made the Akira, and then the Baal HaBayit put it in. Right? V'ichnis Shinehem Peturim. So the question is not from this case. The question is from the first case. When the Baal HaBayit stuck his hand out full, he should be Hayav. Right there, he made a Hakira. And according to you, tell me when you stuck it out with Viyad, you're Hayav. So why does it say Patur? Okay, but that's a big difference. Hatam Nema'la Migimal, Hacha Lemata Migimal. Which is over there in our Mishnah, when you stuck it, you stuck your hand out, it was above 3 Tefachim from the ground. Now we know, above 3 Tefachim from the ground is not considered as if it rested. And therefore, when the Ani takes it, he's going to be considered the Maniach. And therefore, the Baal HaBayit was the Oker, the Ani was the Maniach, therefore he's going to be Patur. However, in this case over here, we're talking where the fellow stuck his hand out, and it was lower, within 3 Tefachim of the ground. Now, within 3 Tefachim of the ground, it's considered as if it rested. So that's a very important condition to remember, you know, when we go back to that Mishnah, that the only case where you could say Patur is so long as the Baal HaBayit sticks his hand above 3. But indeed, if the Baal HaBayit would have stuck his hand within 3, it's considered it rested on the ground. Therefore, according to opinions, he can be Hayav. So comes the new Mishnah. Hamotzi ben bimino ben bismolo. If a person carries on Shabbat, whether he carries with his right hand or carries with his left hand, doesn't matter which hand he carries with, both are considered carrying in a normal fashion, which is normally by, let's say, some other melachot, but let's say writing. We make a difference if he writes, if he's a writing, he writes with his left hand, so that's considered a shinui, and therefore you're going to be patur. By other melachot as well. However, when it comes to the law of carrying, it doesn't matter which hand you carry the item, because no matter what hand is considered essential to you, both are considered the normal way of carrying. Ben bimino, ben mismolo. Okay? It's the only melacha, according to some opinions, that we make no difference between right and left. Betoch heko, or let's say he carries the item in his bosom, or al ketefav, or he carries it on his shoulders, hayav. Which is, even if you carry it on your shoulders, which we might say that's not maybe the normal way so much, hayav. Why? Shechen masa benekehat. Because where do we learn the melachot from? From the Mishkan. Now we know in the Mishkan, the Levi'im used to carry the tabernacle, right? It was a movable tabernacle. And how would they carry it? On their shoulders. So therefore, that considered carrying, right? You learn it from Bnei Ka'ab. Rashi, we'll see that in the Gemara. Rashi, on the Mishnah, let's read it together. Shechen Masa Bnei Kehat. Rashi says, Bakatef Yisau. Right? That's the pasuk where we learned that they carried it on their shoulders. V'yaminu small v'hek. And what's the source for right hand, left hand, and bosom? Ora hara. It's simple logic. That's the derech. That's a normal way of carrying. I don't need a biblical source to teach me right hand and left hand. That's just a simple sivara. Now he quotes from the Yerushalmi. Let's continue reading this Rashi. Ubshem Rabbeinu Yitzhak bar Yehuda matzati shamar b'shem Rav Hai Gaon shemefurash b'ashash Yerushalmi. Rav Hai Gaon quotes Yerushalmi that says the following. He quotes a pasuk. Ufkudat Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. It says, and the job of Elazar HaKohen was what? Shemen Amaor, he was in charge of carrying the oil for the menorah. Ktoret Asamim, right, the incense. Umenchat Atamid, and the meal offerings for the Korban Tamid. Veshemen Hamishcha, and the oil of anointing. So the Gemara Yerushalmi says like this: Shemen Echad Biyamin, one oil he held in his right hand. Veshemen Echad Bismol, and the other oil he held in his left hand. Vaketoret Becheko, and he held the ketoret in his bosom, the habitin and the mincha b'katef on his shoulders. So therefore, according to Yerushalmi, we have an actual biblical source for all the positions that we mentioned in the Mishnah. According to Elazar Kohen, would juggle all the things that he had to carry. He had right hand, left hand, bosom, and shoulder. Comes the Gemara and says, "Kil achar yado." If a person carries something, kilachar yado, which means in an abnormal fashion. Literally, kilachar yado means on the back of his hand. But over here, it's used as in a not normal way. Since the normal way would be to carry it in the palm of your hand. So the way the Mishnah refers to a not normal carrying is kilachar yado. For example, biraglo, a person carries something with his foot, befiv, or in his mouth. Now, obviously, you have to say it's not food. I mean, because food is the wrong way to carry in your mouth. You have to say it's a non-food item in your mouth. Ubemarpeko. So look at that. What is marpeko? According to Rashi, he learns it's an armpit. You're carrying something under your arm. And according to Tosfot, it sounds like you're carrying it in your arm, like by your elbow. It's like maybe you're placing it, you know, between your arm. Exactly. Beozno, if you're carrying something in your ear, ubsado, in your hair, ubefundato ufia lemata, and your money belt that's upside down, meaning the opening is facing down. Obviously, that's not the normal way to carry money in a money belt because it's going to fall out. Right, even though it's knotted, but people don't usually carry their money in a money belt that the opening is facing down. Then fundato lahaluko, or in between his money belt and his robe, which means he's not putting the money in the money belt itself. He's placing it in between his belt and his garment. Ubisfat haluko, or he's placing, let's say, the item that he's carrying in the hem of his garment. Right, so he has a cuff. So he places the item in the cuff. Now we're talking about a cuff that's not easily accessible, which means, because if it was easily accessible, that's considered a pocket. Right? You're just putting it in a pocket and you're storing it there. Let's say he's wearing a long robe and the hem is on the bottom. And therefore it's not the normal thing to carry items on the bottom of his garment. Minhalo ubisandelo. Minhalo would be a shoe. Sandelo would be a sandal. Patur. In all these cases, he's patur. Why? Shelohotzi kederech hamotziim, because he did not carry according to normal way of carrying. Comes the Gemara and says, Amad Rabbi Elazar, that is, hamotzi masui lemala me'asarat tefachim hayav. Now the Gemara discusses a new law. What's the deen if a person carries something above 10 tefachim? Meaning, we know that normally above 10 tefachim in the Rishut HaRabim is considered a mekom petur, right? Anything above 10 tefachim is considered a free zone, so to speak, right? Mekom petur. So the shela is like this. Let's say a guy's walking in the Rishut HaRabim and he's holding an item and the item is above 10. What is going to be the deen? And he walks now, let's say, for amot. Or let's say he goes from Rishut HaYachid to Rishut HaRabim with the item suspended above him, or above the ground, I should say, more than 10 tefachim. Is going to be hayav or not? So the Gemara says hayav. And we need a source for this. So the Gemara says, actually, let's just read Rashi for a second. Hamosi masui lemala ma'aviro be'avir, and he's holding it in the air, biyado, in his hand, ve'eno al ketefo. He's not resting it on his shoulder, because we learned already, when it's rested on your shoulder, I don't care what it is, that's why the chayav, because that's the way they did it in the Mishkan. Vegavoa min ha'aretz asara ka'amar. Right? We said it's above 10 from the ground. The imu munach al ketefo, if you tell me that it's resting on his shoulder, matnitini. Right? We learned already, that's the Mishnah. Then he just says, "Ve'ad itnana zurek dal ramot mekot elemal ma'asara kezurek ba'avir al ma'ir lemal ma'asara reshut rabim dav kezurek aval ma'avir chayav v'lip b'mnei ke'at b'mishkan." The Gemara we learned earlier said if a person threw, let's say, something for amot in the reshut rabim and it landed on a wall above 10, we said patur, because para it landed in mekom petur. So what should be the difference between throwing it and it lands above 10 with your patur, or carrying it above 10? So the Rashi tells us, stay tuned, the Gemara is going to prove it, that that's the way they indeed carried in the Mishkan. Things were being carried, transported, even though they were above 10 tefachim from the ground. So what, we didn't find throwing in the Mishkan, we found transporting. And since the transporting of the Mishkan was done, as we're going to prove above 10 tefachim, therefore you're going to be hayav. So the Gemara says, Shechen Masa B'nei Kehat, because that was the way B'nei Kehat used to carry. Again, B'nei Kehat with the Levi'im, they were in charge of carrying the Mishkan. We're going to prove now methodically that B'nei Kehat carried above 10. How? Umasa B'nei Kehat minalan. How do you know B'nei Kehat carried above 10? Dichtiv. Now we're going to bring a methodical proof over here. The first leg of this proof is, it says, Ala Mishkan v'ala Mizbeach Saviv. We have a pasuk that puts the Mishkan, which is the tabernacle itself, in the same pasuk as the Mizbeach. So the Gemara says, Makish Mizbeach the Mishkan. Must be there's a connection between the Mizbeach and the Mishkan. Ma Mishkan Esed Amot, Af Mizbeach Esed Amot. That's fact number one. Must be that just like we know the Mishkan was 10 Amot high, so too the Mizbeach also was 10 Amot high. Now, how do you know the Mishkan was 10 Amot high? So the Gemara asks, well, Mishkan Gufei Minalan, how do you know the Mishkan was 10 Amot high? Dichtiv, 10 Amot Orech HaKeresh, or Orech HaKaresh actually. The Kereshim were the actual planks. The Kereshim were the actual planks that surrounded the Mishkan, and it clearly says in the Pasuk that the Shi'ur of these Kereshim was 10 Amot. So we know the Mishkan was 10 Amot, and now we know that from association the Mizbeach was also 10 Amot. Uchtiv, and we have a Pasuk that says, Vayifros et ha'ohel ala Mishkan. Which is Moshe Rabbeinu needed to cover the Mishkan. You have to remember the Mishkan, before they put the coverings on, it was roofless. So they put three covers on, as we learned earlier in the Masechet. And one of the covers was called the Ohel. The oil was made up of Yiriot Izim, was the skins of the goats. Now, who covered this Mishkan? Let's say the Levi'im. Let's say Moshe. Now, to cover something that's 10 Amot high, so you have to be at least 10 Amot in order to be able to drape it over. So the Gemara says, Ve'amar Rav, Rav taught us, Moshe Rabbeinu Pirsho. It was Moshe Rabbeinu that actually covered the Mishkan. Mikan atah lamed gubhan shel Levi'im. I said Amot. From here we can learn not only Moshe Rabbeinu's height, but we assume that all the Levi'im that had this job had a similar height, which means they must have been at least 10 Amot high. Which is 10 Amot, was if each Amot is like 2 feet, so it's like 20 feet high. That's the one with giants. That was the standard height. Or maybe that was the normal height in the olden days, and maybe we just got shorter. But again, we're proving this methodically. We proved that, let's go slow again. We proved that what? The Mishkan is 10. That's Befirush Pasuk. Through the Hekesh, we proved that the Mizbeach was also 10. We're going to get back to the Mizbeach in a moment. We proved that what Moshe Rabbeinu and the Levim also must have been 10, because they had the ability to drape the Mishkan, right? So they must have been at least 10 Amot. So now the Gemara says, Vigimidi, and we have a tradition. Dechol tuna, any load, demidle, bemotot, that you're carrying with poles, tilta mele'el, one third of the item is above the shoulders, and two-thirds of the item rest below the shoulders. Explain to you what we're talking about. This is a principle in carrying, the Gemara is telling you. Let's say the Mizbeach. That was one of the items that was transported by B'nei Kehat. It was transported by poles. There were poles on both sides of the Mizbeach, and they would carry it by poles. So the Gemara tells us a rule here in carrying loads. When you carry a load, one third of the item will be above the person's shoulders, and two thirds of the item will be beneath his shoulders. Now we know, we just learned that what? The Mizbeach was 10 Amot, right? If you're going to have two thirds of the Mizbeach beneath the shoulders of the Levi'im, so you have how much Mizbeach? You have 6 2/3 Mizbeach, right? Beneath the shoulder, it means from the bottom from the bottom of the Mizbeach to the ground is how much? 3 1/3 amot. Right? Because they were 10 amot, we proved. Right? So if the Mizbeach, if the Noah were carrying it in the normal way, where 1/3 of it was above, 1/3 would be 3 1/3 of the Mizbeach was above their shoulders. 6 2/3 of the Mizbeach was beneath their shoulders. Now, from the bottom of the Mizbeach to the ground, right, must have been 3 1/3, because we said the Levim were in 10 amot. Now, each amma is 6 tefachim, so therefore 3 1/3 would be 6, 12, 18, and the third would be 2, so 20 tefachim, right? So therefore must be, what do we see from here? That they were carrying above 10 tefachim. So you see, the Mizbeah was carried above 10 tefachim. So what do you learn from there? That if somebody carries an item above 10 tefachim, he's going to be hayab. Why? Because we proved from the Levim the way they carried the Mizbeah, based on the principles that we set forth. Ishtikah, again, when I finishes his proof, it's we see, da'ava midleh tuba, that it was elevated a lot from the ground. Like I proved to you now, it's proved 20 tefachim at least from the ground. Again, let's just calculate it again so you get the cheshbon. The Mizbeah was 10 amot. The Levim was 10 amot.
So it's
according to the way we're understanding it now, it could either be from the shoulder or the head. The way that she understands it, it won't make a difference only of a tefach. Hard to understand how can it only make a difference of a teva, but that's what's mashma from Rashi. That's why I spoke out that let's take the opinion that say we're talking from the shoulder. In this case, it doesn't matter. By 10 amot, Levim, you can even say from the head. But I'm saying shoulder for the next case so we can be clear. But even say take from the head, I have no problem. Take it from the head, let's say, so they're carrying it. So what's going to happen? You're going to have 1/3 of the Mizbeah above the head. So okay, it's 3 1/3 amot. You're going to have 2/3 of it below the head, that's 6 2/3 of the Mizbeah, and from the bottom of it to the ground is going to be 3 1/3 amma, right? Because they were 10, and that's more than 10 to value. Proof positive. Ibayit emma, right? I'll give me another answer. Me aron, I can learn from the aron. Now the aron was the ark, right? That's where they placed the luchot. How big was the aron? Torah tells us it was 1.5 amma tall. Now 1 amma is 6 tefachim, half amma would be 3 tefachim, so therefore the aron was small, it was only 9 tefachim high. Okay? The amar mor, we have a statement, aron tisha, the aron was actually 9 tefachim, vechaporet tefach, and the kaporet, that was the cover that they placed on the aron, also measured a tefach. So the whole aron with its kaporet was a 10 tefachim. Hare kan asara. Right? Now let's go back. The Gemidia, we have our tradition that says what? Dechol tuna de midle bemotot. And any item that's carried with poles. The aron was carried by poles. Tilta mele'el. Right? 1/3 above. Vitre tilte mele'ra. And 2/3 below. Ishtekach de lemala ma'asara hava. Guy, we must be what? That it was above 10. Now, Rashi tells us, what are we gaining by saying this over here? Which means, really, I can tell you, you don't have to make the Levim giants. You don't have to make the Levim 10 amot, like we said in the previous answer. Really, I can tell you that what? The size of the Levim in those days was similar to the size of people in our days, Rashi says. Meaning, 3 amot. Let's say it was 3 amot, and the way I'm explaining, the way that Tosafot clearly speaks out, 3 amot from the shoulder down was 3 amot. 3 amot is 18 tefachim. Right? That was the size of a human from the shoulder down. Now they're carrying the aron to the beam, right? Now they're carrying the aron. Now, 1/3 of the aron is above their shoulders. That would be again 3 3/3 3 1/3 tefachim. Where you have 6 2/3 of the aron below their shoulder, right? To the ground, if they're 18 tefachim, so you have, let's say, 12, right? So again, from the aron, you see they carry it above 10 tefachim. So comes the Gemara and says, Incidentally, let's just read that in Rashi, please. Look at the Rashi, Dibura Matkil V'Iba'et Ema. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines before they get wide. V'Iba'et Ema, lo gabhe Leviyim. And you don't tell me the Leviyim, we're not so tall. They love the Mizbeah Gamrina. I'm not learning from the Mizbeah. The Shema Leviyim lo gabhe ila Zayin Amot. So that she says, even, I don't have to say 3 Amot, I can tell you really the Leviyim were 7 Amot, don't have to say 7 Amot, certainly you're going to have a large Shi'ud. The end Masan, the Mizbeah Gavah Menaharis, Ela Beto Gimel Tefachim, Umearon Gamal Rebbe Azar, which is if you learn that they were 7 Amot, so then already the Mizbeah was just a few tefachim off the ground.
Right?
Because the Mizbeah draped beneath their shoulders, let's say 6 2/3 Amah. And they were
7
Amot, so you had a few tefachim. So you cannot learn from the Mizbeah if there's 7 Amot, let's say. But what? If there's 7 Amot, I could learn from the Aron. Right? Because the Aron, forget about 3 Amot. And now that she's telling you, we can assume that the Nevi'im were 7 Amot just to knock out Mizbeah. But we can learn from the Aron. Right, so at this point, the assumption is that we could have been 7 Amot. Good? So comes again what says. V'nigmat Moshe, what was the problem? How come you didn't learn from Moshe? Meaning, what was the matter with the first proof? The first proof we showed you that Moshe had to be 10 Amot because he draped the Mishkan. If Moshe Rabbeinu was 10 Amot, you could assume what? That the Leviim, who also had the same job, also 10 Amot. So therefore, why couldn't you learn from Moshe? And therefore, subsequently, the other Leviim, B'nei Kehat, and then you could learn from the Mizbeah. What was the problem with the first proof? So the Gemara says, Dilma Moshe Shani. Maybe Moshe is different. Maybe Moshe Rabbeinu was 10 Amot. Who says just because he was 10 Amot that all the Leviim were 10 Amot? How do we know Moshe was different? Damar Mo, because we have the statement. En Ashechina Shora, El Al Hacham, Gibor Ve'Ashir, U'Baal Koma. Which means, exactly, it says Shechina can only rest upon a person unless he has certain qualifications. He has to be a Hacham, he has to be Gibor, which means not only physical strength, but spiritual strength to fight his Yetzer. Ashir has to be wealthy, U'Baal Koma, he has to be tall. So it could be Moshe Rabbeinu was 10 Amot. So therefore he was able to drape the Mishkan. But maybe the Leviim, that she at this point comes, does it, maybe not, maybe they weren't 10, maybe they weren't even 7. Maybe they were standard height, like 3 Amot. That's when he throws in the 3 Amot. And therefore what? I can tell you that the only proof is from the Aron. Right, let's read that in the... Rashi, ishtekach de lemala mika, ibelegma me Moshe, actually, ishtekach de lemala mi yudkei, tuba afilu en guvan shevi ela gimel amot. Come on, Rashi said it in the, by the Aron answer that, if there were 7, you can't learn from the Mizbeah. But if you learn from the Aron, you can say the Levim were even 3 amot, right? Like regular height. Okay, that's fine. So bottom line, how do we know the poles ran on the sides of the Aron, on the sides of the items that they're carrying it. Now they weren't resting it on their shoulder, but they were actually carrying it above themselves, because they were carrying it on their shoulder, already that's clearly going to be Hayav, like we learned from the Mishnah, because that was the Masah ben Ekeah. Comes again. Oh, so that's the Sheilat that the Aharonim ask. According to Rashi, that says that there were 3 Amot, and they carried the Mizbeah. The Mizbeah would be under the ground. Because it's draping 6 2/3 Amot, and then they carry it the normal way. So then you have to start saying that could be you had different size Leviim. You know, could be you had Leviim, well, let's say 3 Amot. Those are the ones that held the Aron. And could be you had some Leviim that were 7 Amot. But what? They can carry them as well. You have no Ra'aya from a 7 Amot Levi to the tent of the Haim item. So therefore we had different stands. That's why I saw one of the Yaharonim bring down. That's the way we're explaining. It ran right across. Comes again what Aram says. Okay, so that's that. Amar Rav, Mishum. Just one point, just the technicality that must be spoken out. We said the Mizbeach was 10 Amot. So that she deals with some discrepancies in the Pasuk. Dibura matril af mizbeach. See that she dibura matril af mizbeach. He says, "Govo yud amot veutzrach lesobebo bekelaim shel yud amot rachav and it was surrounded also by kilaim. Kilaim were like curtains that surrounded the mizbeach. Uma ani mikayim v'gimel amot komato. But if you look at the Torah says that the mizbeach's height was 3 amot. How are you telling me now it is 10? So it says misfat sobeb ulma'la, meaning the mizbeach, if you ever saw the picture of it, it jutted out in the middle. So by the middle, or the, you know, above the mizbeach, it came out, became a little wider at one point. So they're saying from that point to the top of the mizbeach was 3 amot. Really, the entire mizbeach was 10. When it says 3 amot, it's just referring from a certain spot on the mizbeach. Umani became the komahe. However, we have another pasuk that says that the mizbeach was 5 amot. So that's another discrepancy according to what we're saying. So that she answers that the curtains that were around the mizbeach were 15 amot high. Okay? Were 15 amot high. So they were 5 amot higher than the mizbeach. So when it says that the height of the mizbeach was 5 amot, means, exactly, from the top of the mizbeach to the top of the curtain was 5 amot. That's very important to remember that when you read those pisukim, because you want to interpret them that like that, which means you have to know tradition. It was 10 amot. So the 3 amot that it says is from a certain point. The 5 amot is regarding the kilaim. Right? But indeed the shoot was 5. Comes the Gemara and says, indeed was 10. Comes the Gemara and says, Amar Rav Mishum Rabbi Chiya Hamotzi Masui B'Shabbat Al Rosho. A person goes and saying, carry something on Shabbat on his head. So the question is carrying something on your head the normal derech? And you'll be hayab, or you say it's considered a shinu, and you'll be patur. So the Gemara says, hayab hatat. You're hayab hatat. Why? Is that normal? Yes. Sheken anche hutsal osinken. Yeah, because the people that live in hutsal, that's the way they carry their stuff on their head. So the Gemara says, v'anche hutsal lumad de'alva. Anche hutsal. Are they the majority of the world? They're going to set the standard of carrying? Elai et manachid. You want to say it like this. Amar Rav Mishum b'chayah. Echad b'bnei Hutzal she'osim masuya roshom b'shabbat hayav. If the guy from Hutzal carries on his head, he'll be hayav sheken b'nei airo osim ken. Because that's the way they do it in that city. So Gemara says, v'tibatel da'ato etzel kol adam. Let that she'hutzal be considered batel da'ato. They did do something strange. Nobody carries like that. So the Gemara is assuming even on she'hutzal shouldn't be hayav for carrying in such a odd way. So read it like this. Hamotzi masui al rosho patur. Anybody that carries on the head, patur. You're going to tell me, but what do you mean? The guys from Hutzal do that? Batla da'atan etzel kol adam. And therefore, even anche Hutzal are going to be patur. The only question is, you know, why are we saying that Anche Hutzal are going to be patur? For them, that's considered, let's say, the normal way of carrying. Unless you have to say, because Tosfot clearly says, Mashma dal atrana me'amar de batla. Even they themselves, Anche Hutzal, they carry on their head, they're going to be patur. Unless you have to say that the Anche Hutzal was such a minority of people, so therefore, even for themselves, that's not considered enough to be considered a derech for the mechayev themselves. Or that carrying on your head is such an abnormal way of carrying, that even if a guy that decides to carry on his head, I don't care if that's your derech, that's considered kelachar yad. And we start the new Mishnah. Habit kaven lehotzi lefanav. Let's say a person has kavanah to carry something in front of him. The way I picture this is, let's say he's carrying a sort of pocketbook, right? It has a strap, and he wants it to rest in front of him. Of course he wants it to rest in front of him so he can watch it. And what happened? Ubalo laharav. And like many times happens, it swung around him. And now it's in his, by his back, right? So Gemara says, Mishnah says, patur. In that case, patur. Because bottom line, he carried, yes, but not according to his kavanah. Since his kavanah was to carry in front, and he ended up carrying behind him, that she calls him like a mitasek, meaning he did not have kavanah for such a type of carrying. Of course it's asur, but it's not going to be hayav. La harav, ubalu lefanav, hayav. However, the opposite way is Hayav, which means if his Kavanah was, let's say, behind him and it swirled around in front of him, in that case it's going to be Hayav. The Gemara is going to ask, what's the difference? We'll see that. Be'emet Amru. Now the Mishnah says, in truth they said. Now whenever you see the word Be'emet, that means either one of two things. Either it's a halakha that does not have any Mahlok, which means it was universally accepted. That's why I say Be'emet. And the Gemara is going to tell us, whenever the Gemara uses the word Be'emet, it means that that is indeed the halakha. Yerushalmi understands the word Be'emet to mean halakha le Moshe Mesinai. And then the Be'emet Amru, Ha'isha ha'chogeret besinan. A lady that is wearing a sinan. Sinan, we understand, would be like something that she was under her garments, right? Like say, something she wears around her waist. Let's see if she gives us a terminology to it. Sinan, ken mikhnasayim ketanim, small pants that the lady wears under her
right,
a slip, something like that she wears underneath her garment. The hogeret to tol tzniut, right? It's for tzniut purposes, exactly. V'im talta bo shum davar lo tziu ba'lo letzad acher hayevet, which means she wears it. This item generally turns around. So therefore, let's say she hung something on the sinar. The sinar itself is not considered carrying; it's a garment. She hung something on the sinar in front of it, right? And as she was walking, it turned around. Since it's the normal derech for a sinar to turn around, so you're going to be hayav. Let's read that inside. Ha'isha ha'chogeret b'sinar ben b'defaneha, right? Ben b'lachareha hayevet. Why? Shechen ra'u liyot chozer. Because it's the normal way for it to turn around. Rabbi Yehuda omer, af mekabele fitkin. Rabbi Yehuda says, so to mekabele fitkin. Now I'm going to explain this the way the Tosafot explained mekabele fitkin. Let's read the Tosafot inside. Rabbi Yehuda omer, af mekabele fitkin. Mefaresh Rabbeinu Shemuel, sheyesh adam memune lamelech. There's a certain appointee by the king, shenose pitkin shel melech. He carries the letters of the king, the mail. Lidal minyan geburav, the hayalav, ubet osrotav. Which is, he carries certain documents that the king uses, and he sends it out to the army, let's say, to find out how many soldiers he has and how much money he has in his treasury. Venosin otan bechisehen atirim beezorehen. Which is, they would put the letter in a type of a kis, let's say a type of bag or something like that, and he would carry it over him, right? And they would carry, let's say, beezorehen over their waist, okay? Now, as they're running, right, it just swirls around. Sometimes the letter is in front of them, and sometimes the letter is in back of them. So it's similar to the case of Sinat. Just like the lady Sinat is accustomed to spin around, so to this item that the king's officials are wearing, running to deliver the mail, so to speak, so they turn around. So the Bible says this case also is going to be considered Hayav. Tanakama argues and says, no, it's really not the derech for this item. This is only the Bible's opinion. Comes Gemara and says, Maishina lefanav ubalo la'acharav de patur. Why are you telling me in the first case of the Mishnah that where your intention was to put it in front of him and it swung behind him, you tell me patur? Why? Delo et abid machshavto, right? Because that wasn't his kavanah. So in the second case as well, la'acharav ubalu lefanav, it was behind him and went in front of him. Nameh, it should also be patur. Why? Halo et abid machshavto, because also he did not have intent for that. Amar bilazar tabra. Therefore, you must say that there's a contradiction to both statements of the Mishnah. Tabra means it's a contradiction. Nisha shanazu lo shanazu. The one that made the first statement didn't make the second statement, and the one that made the second statement didn't make the first statement. Which means, if you hold patur, you hold patur in both cases. If you hold hayav, you hold hayav in both cases. That's the way Rabbi Elazar understands the Mishnah now. Amar Rava umay kushya. Rav Asa, what's the question? I can answer this. Dilma lefanavu ba'alo la'charab. I can explain the first case in the Mishnah when you put it in front of you and it swung behind you. Hayu tama de patur. This is the reason why you're patur. Why? Then it kaved shmida me'ula. Because by placing it in front of him, he wants a good protection. Right in front of him, he can see it. Ve'alta bi'ado shmida pehuta. And it ended up happening what? He ended up getting a lesser protection. Right? He wouldn't want it behind him. Right, because you cannot watch it. Therefore, it's mipatur. La harabu balo lefanab, where he wanted to put it behind him, and then it swung in front of him. Hayu tama de hayav. I'll tell you, this is the reason why it's hayav. Did it kavenish mina pehuta? Because that's the guy Kevin only say for a minimal protection. Ve'alta biyadosh mina meula. And now we ended up getting a great protection. So therefore, he's happy with it. So therefore, that's why he's going to be considered hayav in the second case. Ela maikusha. So what was the question on the Mishnah? Which means the Gemara started off with a question. And Rabbi Azar came along and said, yeah, there's a contradiction in the Mishnah. Where's the contradiction? The Mishnah, according to the way Rabbi interpreted it, is beautiful. So the Gemara says, Diyukat matnitin kasha. The implication from the Mishnah is difficult. How? Now we're going to learn the implications. First case, Hamit Kaven, Lotzi Lefanav Abalo Lacharab Patur. Right? His Kavanah was to put it in front of him. It went behind him, Patur. Implying, implying that if his intention was to put it behind him and it stayed behind him, he'll be hayav. Now I'll bring you the implication from the second case. Right, where he had kavanah to put it behind him and it went in front of him, in that case you're going to be hayav. Who the hayav? Mashwa, that if you had intention to keep it behind you and it stayed behind you, patur. So the implications contradict each other. The implication of intent to put it behind you and it stayed behind you. From the first case of the Mishnah, it's mashma hayav. From the second case of the Mishnah, it's mashma patur. So there was the question. Amar ibn al-Hazar. So on that, Rabbi al-Hazar said, Tabra. Yes, it's a contradiction. Mishi shenazu, lo shenazu. And then we have to say it was different rabbis that made those statements. Amar Rav Asher, Maikusha. Rav Asher says, well, what's the question with that? I can answer that also. Dilma lo mibaya kamar. Maybe the Mishnah is not to be learned in a way where you have contradictory implications. I can learn the Mishnah in the following way. Lo mibaya la'acharav u'balu la'acharav de'chayav. Which is in the first case, you're telling me what? Intention to put it in front of you, and it swung behind you, patur. Implying, if you put it behind you, and it stayed behind you, hayav. In that case, I'll say hayav. And you know what the chidush is? There's really no chidush, that's obvious, because bottom line, you wanted it behind you, and it stayed behind you, so that's what your intention was. Of course you're going to be hayav. And then the Mishnah gives the second case. Ela afilu le'acharav ubalu lefanav, it's the nikali. Even if, let's say, you placed it behind you, and your intention was not fulfilled, meaning it swung in front of you, you're still going to be hayab. I might have thought that in that case you shouldn't be hayab because his machshava was not fulfilled. Kamash malan, that what? Then it kaven shmina pechuta, v'ratono biyado shmina me'ula, dechayab. Bottom line, since it was an upgrade in shemira, you're going to be hayab, which means the Mishnah is learning like this. Don't learn implications. Learn the Mishnah as building from the obvious case to the big chidush case. That's called a lomi baya. Meaning the first implication is correct. Only when your kavanah was to put it in front and it went behind you, you'll be patur. Implying what? That if you wanted it behind you and it stayed behind you, chayav. That implication is emit. And that is the deen. And the Mishnah is saying this, not only that case where you intended to put it behind you and it stayed behind you, ya chayav, but even the second case of the Mishnah where you intended to put it behind you and it swung in front of you, it wasn't your intention, still you're going to be chayav. Why? Because bottom line was upgrade in Shemirah. Therefore, Rav Asher comes along and says, the Mishnah is fine. The Mishnah can be learned, you know, according to one Tana, without any contradiction, not in the cases themselves, nor in the implications. Comes again and says, "Ulacharavu ba'ulacharav tanei." Actually, this deen of intending to put it behind you and it stayed behind you—that is a machloket of tanaim. That is a machloket amongst the tanaim. The Tanya, because we have a brayta. Hamotzi ma'ot befundato. If a person, let's say, on Shabbat carries money out in his money belt, ufiha lemala, and the money belt's opening is facing up, which is the normal way that one wears a money belt, hayav. Everybody will say hayav because you're carrying it in the normal way. Pialemata, but let's say it's upside down. Now, we're not talking about where the money's going to fall out. Obviously, you're tying it, but it's not the normal way to wear it because there's a concern that the tie might open up and then the money will fall out. So here we have a machloket. Pialemata, the Biudah mehayev. The Biudah says, hayav. Bachamim potrim, and the rabbis say patur. So we have a machloket tanaim. Amar them the Biuda. So the Biuda asked on the rabbis, iatem modim bela harav ubalo la harav shu hayav, which means, don't you agree to me that if a person, let's say, put the pocketbook behind him, and that was an intention to put it behind him, which is also not the most protected way, and still you're saying hayav. So if that case is hayav, so to the kind of the case of the upside down wallet, money bag should also be hayav. You don't agree to me in that case? So no way. So comes the Gemara and says, Amru lo. So the rabbi told him, Yehuda, the iyatam odek el achariyat, the raglosu patur. Well, you don't agree to me that what? The din of kelach ariyad, which is if it's not the normal way, you're going to be patur, which is each rabbi now asks the question on each other. Now obviously they didn't see this case in the same light as their colleagues. Which is Rabbi Yehuda said, what are you talking? This is like the case of acharav, implying that what? That Rabbi Yehuda holds what? Acharav is going to be hayav, and probably the hakamim are going to say patur in that case. That's why they didn't see it like that. And then the rabbis asked on Rabbi Yehuda, but this is kelach ariyad. For some reason, Rabbi Yehuda, now we're not going to say he's arguing on the deen of kelach ariyad, because that seems that was the kula'ama. Ella, for some reason, he'll say that this is not considered kelach ariyad. We'll have to see why. In any event, the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, ani amarti davar ehad. I said one thing, which means I compared this case to acharav, and he wanted an acharav and stayed acharav. And they said another thing. They said what? They compared it to kelachariyad. You know, I don't have an answer for what they said. And they don't have an answer for what I said, which means we're looking at this differently. Now the Gemara says, now we go back. And the fact that Rabbi Yehuda told the rabbis, you don't agree with me that putting it on the back is going to be hayav mash michlal de patir banan. Must be the rabbis hold really it is indeed patur. Which means if the rabbis really held hayav in that case, the real proof is that they should say hayav by the wallet case. Must be the reason why the rabbis say patur by the upside down wallet, because they also say it's patur by the case where you put it on your back. That's really the proof, how you know the rabbis hold that la harav, and you put it la harav is patur. Alright? So the Gemara says, oh, v'letamech, according to that reasoning, dekam re'iyatam odeh, when the rabbis told the Yehuda, you don't agree with me in the law of kelach ariyad, mechlad v'hayev the Yehuda, why, you're going to tell me the Yehuda holds kelach ariyad is hayav, which is the same logic that you want to use in the rabbi's opinion, you can use in the Yehuda's opinion. Meaning, the Yehuda challenged the rabbis and said, you don't agree to the case of acharav? That must mean what the rabbis told acharav is patur. Oh, so let's go the other way. When the rabbis told him, you don't agree kelach ariyad, what are you going to tell me? That means the Yehuda holds kelach ariyad is patur? No, patur, because the rabbis, you don't agree that kelach ariyad is patur? We can tell me the Yehuda is patur, but kelach ariyad can't be why. That tanya, le'achar yado v'raglo, devrei hakol patur. Clearly everybody holds when you carry something in not a normal fashion, you are indeed patur. Ela le'acharav uba le'acharav devrei hakol hayav. Really, I'll tell you, you know what? Everybody holds when you wanted to put it behind your back. And you put it behind your back and it stayed. Everybody's going to hold hayav. And carrying it in an abnormal fashion, let's say on your leg, etc., is going to be patur. So what's the machloket over here by the upside down wallet? The machloket is when you're wearing the wallet upside down. Which means both agree to the dinim. The question is, how do you compare the upside down wallet to? How are you looking at it? One, the Biyuda looks at it as what? As just like you put it behind your back, even though it's not the best Shemitah, you're going to be Hayav. So too, when you're putting it upside down, it's not the best Shemitah, it's upside down, so you're going to be Hayav. When the rabbis come along and say, no, this is worse. This is considered a carrying kedahayim, which means behind your back. That's normal. Which means, it's not the best Shemirah, but at least it's right side up. I'm not worried about it, I might fall out. Here it's upside down, the string might open up, and I might lose my money. So that's considered worse. Let's read that in Dashi for a second. Dashi says, Mor midamel l'acharav. Right? The Biyuda compares it to l'acharav. It's a couple of lines before the Mishnah Matnitin. Dishmirah pechotai. Right? Just like behind your back is considered an inferior Shemirah, so to an upside down wall and in front of you is considered inferior Shemirah. Omor medamele le'achar yado, telodami le'motzi le'acharav, da'ata mishtamnim hem min ha'genavim. At least on back of you, it's protected from the thieves, because the bottom line, it's on you and it's the right side up. Aval elu noflim ele'en. These upside down, they'll fall out. They're what's worse. They're what's considered kela'achar yado. So again, in conclusion of this piece, we just have to go two more lines. In conclusion of this piece, everybody holds the harav hayav. Everybody holds kelachariyat patur. Sheila is, how do you consider a case of an upside down wallet? If you consider it a harav, or do you consider it kelachariyat? Come to Noran says, Be'emet amru. Right? The end of the Mishnah gave a case of the lady with the sinar, right? And the case of the official of the king, that the Biuda said, right, he's carrying the letter, and it moves from side to side. So give us a Tana. Kol be'emet halakai. First, whenever you see the be'emet in the Mishnah, that's universally accepted halakha. Everybody agrees to it. And then for the sinar case, everybody agrees that it's the normal way for it to turn from front to back, and therefore you're going to be hayav. The Biuda Omer, after Kablev Fitkin, Tana, we have a Braita. Sheken lablare malchut osim ken. This was done by the scribes of the kings, which means the scribes of the kings used to have this practice to, when they were running with their letters of the king to deliver them, they would carry them in such a way where they would sway from side to side. Now, I explained the Gemara according to the Tosafot. I should say that the she here from his rabbis, although he didn't like the pshat so much, had a different understanding of the Rabbi Yehuda. He learned that the chidush of the Biyuda is that when these runners are running to give the letters, they have to deliver it to a certain, or I'm sorry, these officials deliver the letters to certain runners that run it to wherever they have to do it. So like, there's two people involved there. The king gives it to the official, and the official have to find the runner. So when they're carrying, let's say, they intended, let's say, at the time when they're carrying, to give it to a certain runner. But let's say they don't find them, and they end up giving it to a different runner. So that's the chiddush of the Yehuda. Even though they didn't intend to give it to that guy, so the hotza'ah was for this guy to give it to, and they ended up being motzi to give it to a different guy. So there, the Yehuda said, you're still chayav. And the Gemara is saying, okay, because that's the normal way of lablarim. Now look at that sheet towards the end. Sheken lablarim malchut osikin, bedatol lemoslan lezeh. Because normally it happens when a scribe intends to give it to one guy, the eno motzo, and he doesn't find him, the davar amelch nachutz, and since it's important that the letter gets there, because the king's word is important, so since it's the derech that's considered, even though he didn't have kavanah, it's still considered hayav. As I said, that she did not like this pshat so much, because it really doesn't fit with the Mishnah. We were talking about a case of a sinar that turns around. The way Tosfot understood it, this case of the king's officials is also the same thing. That the letter swings around from front to back. The way that she's learning, it really has nothing to do with the case of sinar. Baruch Adonai Olam. Amen. Amen.